Hey everyone, it's David Chen, and welcome to a bonus episode of Culturally Relevant. This one's going to be a review of Birds of Prey featuring Melissa Taminga. Now, I've been trying to put episodes of the podcast out every other week, and so therefore weeks in between those weeks, trying to get out some bonus content. This is a review I was able to record with Melissa, in which we talk about Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. That was the original title of the film. It has since been shortened to Birds of Prey. And then after the opening weekend, the movie didn't perform as well as Warner Brothers would have liked. And they have changed the title to now it's listed as Harley Quinn : Birds of Prey in most movie listings. I actually think that's a good move because I thought Birds of Prey was a pretty bad title to begin with. Birds of Prey actually doesn't refer to anything relating to Harley Quinn, and that's why there was the And the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn addendum to the original title. So titling it Harley Quinn : Birds of Prey is like much better because you know it's a movie about Harley Quinn. It's really a movie about Harley Quinn. Anyway, Melissa Taminga is a writer for Seattle Screen Scene, and she's also a professor of film. I always enjoy chatting with her about movies, and I hope you enjoy this chat that we had. If you want to view the video version of this review, I will link to it in the show notes. You can also go to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/DaveChensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y. So I hope you enjoy this conversation and would love to hear what you think about it. You can always email us at culturallyrelevantshow@gmail.com or tweet at us at CrevShow, C-R-E-V-S-H-O-W. Without further ado, here is my chat with Melissa Taminga about the newly named Harley Quinn Birds of Prey.
This all started when the Joker and I broke up. It was completely mutual. And soon enough, I was back on my feet, ready to embrace the fierce goddess within. It's all so quiet. Now that I cut ties with Mr. J, I'm about to learn that a lot of people want me dead. All alone. And at the top of that list is this guy. I'm so peaceful. But it turns out that wasn't the only dame in Gotham looking for emancipation. You fall
in love. Hey everyone, it's David Chen. I'm here with Melissa Taminga from Seattle Screen Scene to talk about Birds of Prey. Melissa, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm excited to dive into this movie with you. It's the first, like, pretty solid movie of the year, I would say.
Yeah.
So excited to chat about this with you. I'll read the plot summary real quick. It's open season on Harley Quinn when her explosive breakup with the Joker puts a big fat target on her back. Now, I was familiar with this character of Harley Quinn mostly from the comic books and from Batman the Animated Series. I knew her a little bit from Suicide Squad. She's introduced in that movie in her current incarnation, played by Margot Robbie. But I was kind of excited to see what they would do in trying to make a movie spin-off, like, just off of villain character. Could they make her relatable? Would that still make sense? So I kind of was a little bit familiar with Harley Quinn. You had basically no familiarity with this character before seeing
virtually
this movie.
None.
Yeah. So as somebody who had virtually no familiarity with this character, what did you think of Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn?
Essentially, coming out of this film, I had mostly a personal response, I think, to it rather than linking it to some other kind of idea of who these characters are. And it ties really back to, I think, my experience with Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. which is, I know she is also in the DC universe, but the personal aspect of it to me is what I was thinking about specifically, in part because I took my three daughters to see Wonder Woman. And there was something so incredibly cathartic about that experience that going into it, I thought, hey, this is just going to be a fun Saturday afternoon with my girls. We're going to, you know, watch a fun movie. But it was one of the most moving experiences that I've really had in a theater, in part because sitting there with my daughters, and I think just the power of watching women on screen and an ensemble of women on screen where really no men at all for the first, you know, fourth of the movie or so. there was something so powerful about that, that I had this kind of, I think, hope for the future, hope for my daughters. And I know it just sounds cheesy. I really like Wonder Woman, but it's not one of those movies that I think is the greatest of all time. But there was something just about the power of that experience alone.
You know, Marvel's made like over 20 movies, and most of them are dominated by men.
Exactly. Right? There's like one woman character, or there's, but really you don't have an ensemble. Apart from how many stars I'm going to give this movie, whether I think it's a great movie, I do really like it, which we'll get to. But I think just the catharsis of going to a film where it's a female lead and an ensemble of women, and they are the focus of the film, there was something, again, so powerful about just that bare experience, that kind of representation, that made me just really hopeful. And also knowing that it was a woman director behind the camera, and also a woman screenwriter, Christina Hodson, it was just a really powerful experience on that bare personal level.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear you had a good experience. We should say the director is Kathy Yan.
Yes.
And overall, I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was pretty good. Let's talk about some of the great elements about the movie. I think this movie would not work if Margot Robbie didn't completely own this character in the way that she does.
Yep.
She really embraces the spirit of the character, the playfulness, a bit of the danger. I would say one of my disappointments with the movie is that this character, Harley Quinn, I always found her to be the most terrifying, like one of the most terrifying villains in the DC universe,
mm-hmm.
because she was like a person who used to be normal, right? Like
right.
she was just like a normal social worker who was like a nice person, and then was so completely corrupted by Joker that she becomes like a sociopathic killer.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a terrifying idea to me. I think unfortunately for this movie to really be widely pleasing as I think it's trying to be, you kind of have to jettison some of the darker elements of that, right? Which is what has happened with this movie.
Yeah.
That being said, Margot Robbie seems like she's having a great time.
Yeah.
She really fought to like have this movie made, and I think it shows like she is having a blast. In the past few years, we've seen movies come out that are like prequels or sequels that can make better the movies that they're referring to. So as an example, like Rogue One, you might watch Rogue One and think, oh, wow, like Star Wars makes a lot more sense now, or that explains this thing I didn't always wondered in Star Wars. The movie Suicide Squad is kind of a nonsense mess. But one thing that this movie, Birds of Prey, does well is it explains why you'd want to recruit Harley Quinn to like a crime-fighting group of people, because she is extremely skilled
Has some skills.
Yeah, she's an extremely skilled fighter. So I'm like, oh, Suicide Squad actually makes like 1% more sense as a result of watching this movie.
Okay.
And we should point out that like there are no people with superpowers in this movie. And in fact, like the character of the Joker is referred to in this movie. You never see him on screen.
You never see him. Yeah.
And I think it's because it might be a little bit confusing because Warner Brothers just released a $1 billion grossing Joker movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but this is kind of like a sequel to Suicide Squad, which is played by a different, not only a different character, but like a whole different vision of the Joker completely. So they're just like, we're not even going to deal with that. I think because they don't have someone who can make fire with their hands or someone who can fly, they want to have good thrills from somewhere else. And they do that with some really well choreographed and executed action scenes, right?
Yeah.
The company that did the action scenes was the same company that was founded by Chad Stahelski, who helped to create John Wick, right?
Yeah.
And he apparently helped with some reshoots of this movie. And I think overall, the action looks awesome.
It looks really good. Yeah, I really loved the action sequences. And I wasn't specifically thinking about John Wick, even though I read afterwards that was the same company. I was thinking maybe more of Hong Kong type action scenes. There's a lot of those kind of...
John Wick's super inspired by that.
Exactly. Yeah, so that makes sense, in that sort of line.
So I'd say like those were kind of my two favorite aspects of the movie, is like Margot Robbie and also the action I thought was really well done. The movie kind of has this very odd narrative structure to it. It reminded me a lot of Fight Club, actually.
Yeah, that's an interesting connection.
Where it's like a first person, and then she's like, actually, let me back it up a little bit and like tell you about this.
Four minutes earlier, three months earlier.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think ultimately I did come to embrace that narrative style, in part because it is so closely connected to the Harley Quinn character.
Mm-hmm.
And the narrative style is coming so much from her perspective. It's almost as if she is sitting down and either writing in a diary, just kind of freelancing it a little bit, or sitting down and talking to a friend in the same way that you would talk to a friend. I'm going to tell you a story and then, oh, wait, I forgot to tell you this other thing. And now I'm going to back up and then you keep going. And then, oh, wait, I forgot to tell you this other thing. So it has that sort of style that feels very freewheeling, which is very much connected to the Harley Quinn character. And so I did appreciate how it seemed committed to that, committed to her character and committed to that narrative style because of her character. And just actually to get back to her character a little bit more, because I really have virtually, again, no familiarity with the Harley Quinn character. I didn't come to it with any sort of expectations about who she was. It was almost more of a pleasant surprise to say, oh, this is not someone who is really a villain, but she's not really a hero. And I kind of like that strange middle ground in which she was in. And I was also thinking about her in terms of she seems very much like Joker in the sense that she is an anarchist. Joker is an anarchist, but I like the distinction that the film seemed to be making between the two of them based on people's knowledge of who Joker is. Joker is someone who's an anarchist who is also a sadist. He enjoys the way that anarchy he inflicts upon the world hurts people. Mm-hmm. Whereas Harlequin seems to me as she is this character who is an anarchist in the sense that she's just heedlessly going through life, kind of enjoying every single bit that she can suck out of it because she needs something about that sensory experience of everything. And there are people that get hurt in her wake. And part of the whole conceit of the movie, too, is all these people are coming at her with their grievances because she has hurt them along the way. But there's something so joyful, I think, about her anarchy that it's really hard not to enjoy it with her, even though you realize that she is creating problems. And I love the way that Kathy Yan does really lean into that sensory element of it, that you are from Harlequin's own POV, as it were, understanding why she loves these things that she's loving. I mean, there's this early on in the movie, for example, she orders an egg sandwich, and it is the most kind of jiggly, greasy.
It's very food porny.
It's a very food porny egg sandwich. Yeah. And that is Harley Quinn's.
It made me want to eat an egg sandwich.
It did.
That's
yes,
how good it was.
Exactly. But it was also had a little bit of like the grossness to it too. Mm-hmm. But that was also Harley Quinn loves that too, just because it's so, again, there's something about the texture of life.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Now, one thing I had been reading about this movie is the movie begins right at the top with Harley Quinn's character breaking up with Joker, right? This character that she's been in love with and has kind of helped to shape her identity, and she's broken up with him. And like, I read a lot of people saying like, oh, this movie totally captures how I feel like when I go through a breakup. And like,
interesting,
I didn't get that at all. And I'm curious, like, if you like, what you made of the whole breakup narrative. Like, did you find this movie to be illuminating at all of the idea of going through a breakup? And also, as somebody who's like not as familiar with the different renditions of Joker, like, he's kind of a presence that hangs over the whole film,
right?
You know, how did you experience that? Were you like bothered that we never saw Joker? Were you like wondering, like, I wonder what Joker's doing, you know?
Right. Well, I'm not sure that it completely resonated with me, the whole breakup and her response to the breakup, that I really felt that personally. It did seem to me that it was making a kind of interesting commentary, specifically in terms of gender and the way that maybe women sometimes get entangled with a very toxic man who is hurting them, and they do have this, they extricate themselves from that relationship, but then the extrication is almost as painful as being in the relationship itself. And so it's hard to know what is better. I mean, she realizes once she's out of this relationship, she suddenly doesn't have the protection of him anymore. Yeah. And it did remind me very much just of abusive relationships. I mean, it's hard for women to leave abusive men in part because they are affording some kind of protection to them. And so I do think there's an, even if it
like
isn't,
being in the relationship means like, you know,
you get a food and a house and you have money and you have access to certain things, you know, and when you leave that, you're cutting yourself off from your ability to have some measure of independence or I guess security in some ways. And so it had some resonances of that, which I thought was really interesting. And because I think there is, you do have a little bit also of wanting to see Joker, but I appreciated the commitment of the film of not allowing us to see Joker. It reminded me a little bit of, and this is a completely different, tonally different film or TV series, but the TV series Unbelievable. Did you watch that TV series?
Yes, I did. The Netflix, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a moment at the end of that TV series when the women who have been abused by this rapist are...
We should say spoilers for Unbelievable.
Spoilers for Unbelievable. They're confronting their rapist and you don't get his reaction to what they're saying to him at all. The TV series is committed to just being what these women are feeling and experiencing. And again, on a much lighter, different level, I appreciated the commitment of this film of staying with Harley Quinn as a character and her working through that extrication from her relationship with Joker and finding other ways to find a stability and security in herself. Specifically in reaching out to other women, of course. Although she's rebuffed initially, she tries to make contact with other women. There's a specific scene with these roller girls, and they mock her, and which I think is also an interesting move because it's not just, yay, women's solidarity. You know, it's women can be really cruel to women too and not be supportive of women that are getting themselves out of bad relationships. But then ultimately she finds...
It's about like finding your tribe, right?
Yeah,
finding a group of people that are going to understand you, really, ultimately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so let's dive into spoilers and talk more freely about Birds of Prey. So if you don't want to be spoiled on the movie, then you should tune out now. But let's talk about spoilers. Now, in terms of just geeking out about this movie, I want to say I think my favorite scene from the movie was when she busts into the police station with the kind of grenade launcher. It's just so executed because she has this bandolier of these like cartridges on her, and the choreography of her taking out the thing and shooting and then like hitting people with it and then inserting a new thing into it. It's like a dance. It's balletic in terms of how well she executes it. So just from a sheer visceral thrill, I really enjoyed
and,
that part.
And it's, I don't know exactly what they were, but they're filled with sparkle dust.
Some of them have like what seems like toxic gas and others have like confetti in them.
But it's all sparkly and you get the sense of the texture of what's going on, as well as just the movement, the balletic movement, as you were talking about.
I think one of the key challenges that this movie has is it tries to do so much, right? You need to establish everything that happened to Harley Quinn after Suicide Squad. You need to build Harley Quinn up as a character that we actually care about and root for and want to see succeed, while also balancing her psychotic tendencies.
Right.
And then you're also introducing like five other characters who are going to become this like Birds of Prey squad for potential future movies we don't know yet. And then on top of all that, like even separate from all those things, there's this relationship that she has with this character called Cassandra Cain, who's played by Ella J. Basco. And we've seen kind of that relationship before of like kind of older, depressed, over it, person tries to like refine their zest for life through friendship with a younger child. And I wasn't sure if all of those things I just said succeeded. You know what I mean? Like, did any one of those work better for you than the other components? I thought it's just like a very ambitious movie and it like lands, you know, a decent quantity of it. But like, for instance, I wasn't super convinced by the relationship between her and Cassandra Cain. I felt like there's just not enough there to convince me that this bond would really have formed. What did you think of that relationship? What did you think of the other components?
That is really interesting. And initially when I was going into the movie, I knowing that of course it's Margot Robbie as this main character, Harley Quinn, and then you have all of these other women, I did wonder how is this huge outsized character of Harley Quinn not going to overshadow all these other women and all of these other relationships. And I will say that I did get a sense at the very least of having a specific idea of who each of these other characters are. To me, they did feel very distinct. You don't necessarily get a ton of backstory, and there's possibly ways that you could have given more texture to them. But it seemed to me that when they were on screen, you felt the weight of them, both as their characters were written, but also just as these actresses embodied them. I mean, looking at Journey Smollett-Bell,
She was awesome in this movie.
She was so good.
This is like a star making. I mean, she's been in other things, but I felt like this is an amazing performance.
Incredible.
That's going to be like, I hope she gets a lot more work after this.
I agree. And you again, it's a much quieter performance. She's a much quieter character, but you feel, again, the weight of her as a character. And she feels just as weighty as someone like Harley Quinn, who is out there and crazy. I thought Mary Elizabeth Winstead had a real weight to her as well. Rosie Perez as Montoya, this cop, again, a very different character. I really liked her in that role. And there's a lot of meta stuff going on about how she's just like other cops that you've seen.
Yeah.
And that I did like Cassandra Cain and Ella J. Basco's performance, but I didn't quite completely believe the connection that she would have had between Harlequin and,
because you're supposed to believe that like this is the relationship that like turns her whole life around,
and at the end like, it's those two going off,
and they're, it's just like, don't quite buy it. Like, it came like kind of close, but like I didn't quite buy it.
Right.
You know?
I mean, there was some really nice, I did love the little moment when they were sitting on the couch eating cereal and watching TV.
That was nice.
I wanted a little bit more of those kind of connection.
Agreed.
Moments where you felt like, okay, here's something that we can go from.
No discussion of this movie would be complete without talking about Ewan McGregor's role as the villain of this movie, you know? And I thought there were a lot of great things about this performance. I mean, first of all, he is gnawing on the scenery
he's
chewing on it like a delicious, you know, bodega breakfast sandwich.
He's giving Margot Robbie a run for her money a little bit in terms of.
I also think like it's one of the scarier introductions of a villain that I've seen in a movie. There's many movies I see where like a villain is introduced murdering people.
Yep.
For instance, another movie where that happens is like The Raid. You know, the villain character like executes a bunch of people and it's like, oh, you know, this person
needs
business.
Okay, this is a bad guy.
And thank you. And then in this movie, he's like basically cutting people's faces off. Including
which
a child.
So gruesome. A child, a woman, yes.
It really did
establish. And they're so demeaning. He's so demeaning to them.
Yeah, it's horrifying. So this is a thing of like the tone, right? Like it's an R-rated movie.
Absolutely.
It's the most R-rated movie, you know, of
very
all the...
Very crunchy and violent.
And at the same time, you're supposed to find him a little bit laughable as well, right?
I think so, and also see a certain kind of vulnerability in his character, which of course he turns into wanting to grab more power because of that.
Right. He's... So what'd you think of the performance? Did you like it? Did it work for you?
I did like it. I mean, I think it worked over the top because there's so much about the film that's over the top.
Yeah.
And if he had pulled back a little bit, it wouldn't felt like it would tone.
If he acted like a normal villain, but he's kind of more like a Bond villain than he is like a villain in a regular movie.
Like
a drama or something.
Yeah, he felt cartoonish and that was appropriate for this particular film. There were a few things that I really liked about some of the things that Cathy Yan did with establishing him, particularly as a villain character. There's one scene, for example, in his club. I think it's his club, right?
I think so.
And there's a moment when he is sitting and he notices this woman laughing. Across the way, and she's just in a conversation with someone else, and he immediately thinks that she is laughing at him, or he assumes that she's laughing at him. So he goes up to her, and of course she has no idea that he's angry at her, and then he goes about humiliating her, forcing her to get undressed, having the guy that is with her undress her, and it's just humiliating and grotesque. And I was thinking about how in other movies, there are so many scenes where the villain is doing something to torture, particularly a woman character, I would say, to really establish that they are baddies, that they're so terrible. But one of the things I liked about this movie is it is just a really small thing, but they give this woman a name. Her name is Erica. And normally in a film, if a person has a name, I think especially if it's a woman, you expect this person to come back, right? Because they must have some narrative weight. But it seemed to me that Cathy Yan and the screenwriter, presumably, wanted to give her a name to establish a personhood and a humanity to this person, that it's not just to show the villainy of the Sionis character, but it is to also emphasize that this is a person that he's doing this to. And in in a very cartoony, over-the-top movie, it seemed like a little gesture toward understanding how women are so often just objectified and thrown aside in order to establish the villainy of the male characters.
That's an interesting point. Another related point is also on our last review of the rhythm section, which is also directed by a woman. We talked about how we didn't feel like that movie had the male gaze particularly, even though it features a beautiful woman. And this movie, I've read, like, you could easily imagine that scene that you're referring to being much more tantalizingly shot.
Exactly, especially because your clothes are being
ripped off.
Yeah.
And it's not shot that way at all.
Like, no,
it's not shot in any way that would be appealing to anyone.
Exactly.
Right? All that's left is kind of the violence, the humiliation. It's not at all like tantalizing in any way.
Right.
Let's talk about the last action scene in the movie. I really quite enjoyed the aspects of Margot Robbie like chasing after this car on roller skates. And they really shoot and edit it in a way that sells it as being extremely dangerous what she's doing. I think you also had a good reaction to like the action scene that happens before that, right? Where there's like they're trying to protect Cassandra Cain while these like hands are spinning around in this funhouse.
Yeah, I really, really did love that action scene too, where you have, I think it is maybe the only scene where all of the women are together kind of as an ensemble, and they are all fighting the various baddies that are coming in. And it's this crazy production design, the set of these huge hands that are rotating. So they're using the hands to fight. But then you also have the Cassandra Cain character, who all of the women have some sense of wanting to protect her, I think, and they all, a lot of them have an individual moment where they're making sure she's okay, or they're fighting something off, fending something off, and making sure also that she isn't having really to do any of the fighting herself. So that was just a great feel for that. And then there's also a really wonderful moment where Harley Quinn goes up to, or she skates by Black Canary, and she offers her a hair tie. And she says, "Hair tie? Sure." And then she puts it in, and then the moment goes on. But it's just such a wonderful moment because it called to mind so many other action scenes where you have seen women in films, and they just look beautiful and gorgeous, and their hair is flowing and shiny. But it's completely impractical in terms of actually how action would work out. You would want your hair back in a hair tie. And so Harley Quinn understands that, and she offers Black Canary a hair tie, and she's, "Yes, great, I'd love a hair tie." And then they keep going. And it just felt like, again, a very specific moment, element of texture that definitely a woman would be thinking about for sure. It just added, again, a little bit of a kind of a pop. It is an element of humor to the scene as well, but also a bit of just truth, I would say, that I really appreciated.
One of the things this movie offers is an interesting vision of Gotham. I think when you look at movies like Man of Steel and Justice League and Batman v Superman, it's like a heavy CG,
so dark,
fantasy, dark version.
Literally dark in terms of the color.
It's literally just dark, bleak, all the time.
Yeah.
And this is much closer to like a movie that feels like it's set in New York.
It does. That's the feeling that I thought too. Yeah. It almost feels like, certainly this is a place that has crime, and it's maybe elements of it are dangerous, and it's maybe depressed in certain areas, but it did feel like a city that people actually lived in.
Yeah.
And that people were not necessarily depressed all the time, and they could actually go out and might be, you would know the bodega store owner.
Well, I think it's just refreshing that it's not just like people standing in a CG background.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Like it feels like a real place. Because like I feel like so much of Man of Steel and Batman v Superman was just like these characters standing in front of this CG darkness.
You don't get a sense that they're really people living there at all, even. But you have a bunch of little side characters. There was a character named Doc who Harley Quinn lives above, and of course he betrays her, which I actually thought that was a really great moment in the scene that added some texture to her character. Then you had the character of Sal, who she buys the egg sandwich from, I think. And again, these are named characters. They aren't on screen for very long, but it felt like it added the sense that the city is a real place, and there are people that really live here, and they're making a living here, and they live in a real neighborhood.
Yeah. It's also interesting to compare it to like other versions of Gotham we've seen on the big screen. Yeah. Like I'm thinking also of like The Dark Knight.
Right,
you
absolutely.
Know? And it's closer to that, but even that Gotham felt very like polished and shiny.
It did.
You know, beautiful, but like not, this is like very lived in.
It has kind of a scrappy feel to it.
Yeah, like the Gotham of the Dark Knight was, and I know much of it was shot in Chicago, but like the Gotham of the Dark Knight was like the financial district.
Yes,
and this
exactly.
is like the Bronx or something
yeah,
like that.
Right,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? Mm-hmm. So I, you know, appreciated like that it gives a very different, it has a different version of Gotham to match the sensibility of the character.
Yeah, I agree.
At mm-hmm. the end of the day, is this a character that you're rooting for now though, right?
Like you were saying earlier, this isn't necessarily a character that feels like she is a villain. But she isn't necessarily a hero either. I mean, I do feel like there's a little bit of a murkiness to her character still that I'm not exactly sure what I will be rooting for next for her necessarily. I think ultimately what the emancipation is that is in the subtitle of the film has to do with her extricating herself from Joker and really from a male kind of centric world perhaps for mm-hmm. herself and allying herself with a woman character and other women and finding her emancipation through that in a kind of community with other people. And actually each of all of the women characters, I think they are all in terms of their backstory and what they are fighting, they are all in some way extricating themselves from either particular men or from the violence of men that have been in the background of their lives for the Huntress character, for example.
Yeah.
And so that seemed like that was specific to this film, but in terms of, and I really liked the kind of thematic thread of all of that. But in terms of the Harley Quinn character, what is she going to go on to do?
Yeah.
What are we interested in her doing? She's not a crime fighter.
Right.
Again, is she just going to live her sensory experience and sort of like wreak havoc along the way?
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
I'm not really sure where she's going necessarily.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, this movie is kind of selling a fun bubblegum pop version of this character.
Which is great. And it was committed to that.
It's committed to that. And I think I'm cool with it because we've seen movies be extremely successful when they take big chances with these characters. Like with Todd Phillips' Joker. I wasn't a huge fan of that movie, but say what you will about that movie, it really does
it
take chances
well.
With that
yeah.
movie. And it was very successful.
Right.
You
yeah.
know? And this movie is saying, hey, what if we downplayed all of the extremely terrifying aspects of Harley Quinn, made her into this fun person you can kind of get behind and,
yeah.
you know, girl power and see where it goes from there. And the result is like a movie that's pretty enjoyable, has some great action. The I would argue actually probably the best hand-to-hand action, hand-to-hand combat fight scenes of
recent.
Certainly any DC movie, possibly yeah. even any Marvel film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, Captain America, those movies are really good from the hand-to-hand combat. But, you know,
yeah.
I think there's nothing wrong with it. I think it's a great time at the movies, even if it is a little bit all over the place from a tone perspective and from a narrative structure perspective.
Right,
But, yeah, overall, I had a positive impression.
Yeah, I agree. And I did... Just the overall production design and the costuming and the makeup, you get a sense that there was a real joy in creating all of these. And it did really feel like each of the characters' outfits and makeup and their look really felt like it felt organic to them. And I did read that actually that Kathy Yan worked with each of the actresses about what they liked and what suited them and their body types. And it felt, you could feel it. I think. And I really appreciated the commitment to that. It didn't just feel like people were squished into certain suits.
You know, what you want when you make a movie is like a blending between the actor and the character.
Yes, exactly.
Right? You want mm-hmm. the final performance to like play to the characters
right.
and the actor's strengths.
Yeah.
Both like to be a successful combination of both. It felt like that to you.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. And maybe that was partly why it felt a little scruffy around the edges too, because it's hard to make something wholly cohesive and also being attuned to each individual
yeah.
kind of person. But I kind of appreciated again, at least the attempt to do that and the moments when it came together, I thought it worked.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our review of Birds of Prey. Melissa, where can people find your stuff on the internet in the meantime?
So I write for Seattle Screen Scene occasionally. I'm also on Twitter at One April Day, and you can find me on Letterboxd as well, just kind of writing quick comments on certain films under my name or One April Day.
I'm also on Letterboxd. I just restarted my account, really enjoying it. Follow me on Twitter as well, at Dave Chensky. Thanks for watching. See you in the next one.